Good evening and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. A state commission slams federal immigration agents alleging illegal and violent conduct during Operation Midway Blitz and pushes the Cook County State's Attorney to act.
The U.S. Justice Department will not be doing any investigating of these agents who committed these atrocities. So what is left? What is left is our local prosecutors.
But state's attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke says she can only act after getting a completed investigation from law enforcement.
A judge can make this decision. A judge should have made the decision to keep that person in jail.
Democrats defend the law that ended cash bail in Illinois after a suspect released on electronic monitoring is accused of shooting two police officers, one fatally. Meantime, a federal judge denies former State House Speaker Michael Madigan's appeal bid. Mayor Brandon Johnson nominates a new Chicago Inspector General as the former watchdog takes over as Chief of Staff for the Illinois Attorney General. And after more than 2 months, Congress votes to end a partial government shutdown. And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Jake Sheridan of the Chicago Tribune, our own Heather Sharon of WTTW News, Monica Ang of Axios Chicago, and Mac Lederman of Block Club Chicago. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to it. So Heather, before we jump into all that news, earlier today reporting that the president has told Congress the war on Iran has been, quote, terminated. This is ahead of a 60-day deadline that would require lawmakers to further authorize the conflict. Do we have a clear sense of where things are going from here?
We don't. There's been no withdrawal of troops from the Persian Gulf, and there's no indication that the Strait of Hormuz, which is, of course, why gas prices have increased significantly, have sort of changed. Also, there's no indication that the president's announced military blockade of the nation of Iran is ending. So it's very not clear what this means, if anything, but it is no doubt an attempt to sort of head off another vote in Congress that could sort of declare that the president does not have the authority to execute military maneuvers in Iran or around Iran.
Yeah, it could be a termination in name only, at least for now. All right, well, the Illinois Accountability Commission delivered its report this week on the conduct of federal agents during Operation Midway Blitz. What are some of the key takeaways folks need to know about?
Well, it was clear that the commission found that the Department of Justice, directed by the White House, essentially lied about what agents were doing while they were here in Chicago, and that they said they were here to sort of take away the worst of the worst and to find people who had criminal records. The commission found there was no evidence of those sort of people being targeted, but that these raids were indiscriminate and, as they said, explicitly violent. They also called on Cook County State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke to use the power of her office and to charge those agents criminally, not just the agents who shot Miramar Martinez in early October, but the other agents that sort of created the chaos of the tear gas and the pepper balls and everything else that we all reported on during the fall. But it's not clear, as we heard, whether the state's attorney is going to sort of take that referral and really do anything with it.
Yeah, you know, that they're saying they've referred their findings to a number of law enforcement agencies. As you mentioned, the Cook County State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke. You know, Mac Lederman, why do we have a good sense of why the state's attorney and all these other officials are at sort of an impasse here? She's saying, I can't act yet. And they've said, mm-hmm. No, we've given you the information that you need.
Yeah, she seems to have really dug in on her position here, Nick. And a lot of that just relates to feeling like her hands are tied. The county prosecutors work very closely with ATF, other federal agencies, on a number of cases. And it would take quite the stomach to prosecute a federal officer who was doing work while on the job. That's largely unprecedented and really something we haven't seen throughout the country. So the state commission so far has begun to unravel everything that happened in this blitz. And it was a blitz. It happened so fast. So we're beginning to see the evidence, the body camera footage, the reports, all coming out and beginning to be made sense of and put in front of her. What happens with that, I think it's unclear, but I think it's a very high bar to actually bring a prosecution.
Last week in circuit court, representatives for the state's attorney's office said, look, we can't just be scouring the internet to look for this evidence, and we need law enforcement agents to bring this to us. Well, I think watching those Illinois accountability hearings, they have created these dossiers, these really manicured dossiers showing here are all the times when we believe they have committed a crime. Here are all the statements they've made that are directly contradicted by body cam footage. It's almost as if they're saying, okay, you needed a case to be like perfectly made for you. We're handing
it
to you.
There you go.
They're not letting it run the clock out.
Yeah. No. Well, you know, it was interesting. We heard yesterday on our air from the chair of the Accountability Commission saying he expects to see local prosecutions of federal agents in other states and other jurisdictions. Do you think that's the kind of thing that might turn up the heat here?
Yeah, I think that absolutely could. And we've seen that in a lot of the different executive orders or anything like that in one state or one city. You know, there's been a lot of copycat responses to this really unprecedented moment across the country where there's political pressure to do something if people see someone else doing it.
Yeah. You know, Monica, Midway Blitz was among the reasons that congressional Democrats had been demanding big changes to the Department of Homeland Security, which of course led to a partial shutdown that ended yesterday. Where does it feel like things go from here? I mean, is this, you know, sort of a loss for congressional Democrats, or have they been able to apply some successful pressure?
Well, I think they certainly highlighted the issue of what DHS agents have done. Were they successful in, you know, restricting the funds? Probably not, but I think they think there's a certain level of success in highlighting the issue, which has been a very, very negative and detrimental issue for Trump's approval ratings.
Yeah. You know, immigration, one of the many issues for demonstrators at today's May Day protest, that it sparked a big fight between CPS and CTU. A spokesperson said about 2,200 students went on field trips. Preliminary numbers show elementary attendance about on par with other days, high school attendance a little bit down. Jake, you were covering some of today's action. What did you see?
Yeah, I was at the protest. There were hundreds of people there. You know, the thing I heard most from the speakers on stage was tax the rich. You know, it was definitely, I think, as one would expect, focused on big corporations, ultra wealthy people. But there were a lot of other complaints and demands being made. A lot of the focus was on the war in Iran. And the spending that's going on in that war. Mm.
You know, and this was something that, you know, CTU was able to come to a deal with CPS to create this sort of a civic action day. You know, Heather, do you think this might be something we see in future years on May 1st?
Well, they certainly want to make it an annual event, and part of their contract allows for a day of sort of civic action. It's not clear whether it will look exactly like it did today or whether they'll try to make other changes, but it's clear that, you know, the CTU is not sort of abdicating their sort of self-proclaimed role as political powerhouse in Chicago politics. And we are about to go into a local election year. Mm-hmm. So they are certainly going to be looking to flex those muscles.
Yeah, it's a muscle. I mean, when you strike, and that's where the power of these organizations comes from. You know, a one day when you have a mayor that you like and a school board that you can tolerate shows that you still have this ability, reminds voters, reminds these elected officials that you can do something bigger if you need to.
But I think we should keep in mind this wasn't the giant day of protest that many had hoped. Walk out of school, walk out of work, no business as usual. I got a call from a national radio station, so like nobody going to work in Chicago today?
I'm right.
The protest itself, it wasn't like totally
abnormal.
It wasn't thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah, it's going to be
and a cold day, too.
I was going to say, not necessarily ideal conditions out there that one might hope for on May 1st. All right. Well, we are seeing another huge conversation around electronic monitoring after the weekend shooting at Swedish Hospital. A suspect released on monitoring that he'd reportedly violated the terms of, now charged with the murder of a Chicago police officer. You know, Jake, you've and your colleagues at the Tribune had been taking a look at kind of the chain of events. What exactly happened? What's the latest that we know?
Yeah, we know that two officers are being investigated for the search that occurred of the man who had a gun. I mean, he got a gun into a hospital after being apprehended. You know, clearly something went wrong there. So they're being investigated now. Mm.
And, you know, there's all sorts of debate back and forth, which we've seen since the passage of the Safety Act, about whether this is the right idea. You know, Monica, supporters of the law say it's not about cash bail. It's about whether judges make the right call here.
Right. I think everybody's pointing to Like, who a lot of people do not like anymore. Judge Like made the decision. This guy was already out on electronic monitoring for another felony, and then he gets put out on electronic monitoring for this felony. They wonder why that was the best idea. And we're still not finding out. We've got the transcripts, but we're still not finding out why that happened and why, after a warrant was issued for his arrest, more than a month later, nobody, it seems, had moved to apprehend someone whose electronic monitoring technology had been turned off, and he hadn't shown up for his hearings. Right. What happened there? Clearly something's wrong in the system.
Yeah, I mean, Mac, is this more of a question of there are gaps in other parts of the system that, mm-hmm. that need to be addressed rather than an issue with monitoring itself, perhaps?
I mean, this feels like something we continuously write about anytime there's high-profile crimes. I was covering an incident in 2024 when a man violated his electronic monitoring and ended up killing his wife, despite being on that monitoring for a crime related to her. That his system didn't ring when he was in her vicinity, mm-hmm. so a lot of questions around there. And you know, this system has been large and unwieldy for a very long time now. Over 5,000 people on electronic monitoring in Cook County, according to a study. That's compared to Los Angeles County, which only has about 300 people on these systems. So there's been efforts to consolidate this under the county clerk. But when the circuit court was told that the system would have to be theirs, they pushed back on it. They didn't want it. The sheriffs didn't want it. So who runs this and how many people are on it, I think, is a really open question.
Yeah, there's a lot of logistics that go into something like that, for certainly. Mm-hmm. All right, Heather, a federal appeals court, they upheld former House Speaker Michael Madigan's conviction. This comes after two of the so-called ComEd 4 caught up in the corruption investigation here, were granted new trials. Were you surprised to see that split at all?
I wasn't. So if you remember the timeline events, and who does, really, it seems like this happened a decade ago. The so-called ComEd 4, who are going to get new trials, it seems like, were tried before the most recent Supreme Court decision, sort of narrowing the definition of bribery. Madigan, however, was tried after that Supreme Court decision was in place, so prosecutors and defense were able to sort of tailor their arguments and the charges that he was facing to sort of abide by those guidelines. And it was clear that the appellate court did not buy Madigan's argument that this was just business as usual. He said, I think that is perhaps your problem if you think this is business as usual and perhaps why you should stay in jail. There's no doubt that it was a big blow to Madigan, who I think was heartened by the other sentences being overturned. And I would not be surprised if he or his lawyers were a little bit surprised at sort of the, you know, straightforward and unambiguous decision by the appellate court.
Yeah, and you have to imagine prosecutors, you know, in those presumed retrials, assuming they refile charges, are going to try to use some of what they learned during Madigan's.
Absolutely. They will have different arguments. They will have a different jury. However, the ComEd 4 cases were just a little bit different than Madigan, right? It was sort of, they were the bribe-ers as opposed to the bribe-ees. And it's a little bit unclear whether the Supreme Court thinks that you should be held criminally responsible by giving somebody a bribe or a gratuity or, you know, I don't know, kudos. So we'll have to see what happens.
I think a lot of this has to do, though, of making an example out of Madigan while this ruling was affirmed. I think in the decision they mentioned, you know, this is not politics as usual. So really, Madigan, I think, is the staple bearer of just corruption in the state of Illinois. So walking back on his sentence, I think, was something nobody really had the appetite for.
Yeah, even if, other folks may have been criminally liable, they may not be as high profile. Yeah. You know, the average person might not be able to name all four members of the ComEd 4, certainly.
We can, though.
Yes, but that is our own problem that we have to deal with. All right, sticking with some high profile trials, Mac, federal prosecutors, they're dropping the felony conspiracy charges against the protesters who were arrested after a demonstration outside the Broadview ICE facility. So now just facing misdemeanor charges here.
Yeah, prosecutors say they're going to change felony charges to misdemeanor charges against progressive activist Kat Abu-Ghazaleh and three other candidates. Two other political candidates wrapped up in this have already had charges dropped. So another example of just seeing federal charges crumbling upon inspection against politicos and protesters related to the immigration crackdown. This incident has a lot to do with Abu-Ghazaleh and these other candidates blocking a federal vehicle from exiting the Broadview facility in a protest in September. Definitely a very low bar to charge someone there with a crime. So interesting to see if they'll continue this fight in court.
Yeah, you have to wonder whether those misdemeanor charges might just go away at some point.
Well, I think it bears sort of pointing out that these charges for conspiracy were dropped after Judge April Perry ordered the Department of Justice to provide grand jury transcript proving to sort of, you know, detail how they proved to the grand jury that these charges were appropriate to be brought. Instead of doing that, they said, we're going to go ahead and drop those cases, which I think raises a lot of questions as we we have seen nationwide about how the Department of Justice is doing their job and what sort of arguments they're making behind closed doors that don't seem to be able to stand up to the light of a courtroom.
Yeah, prosecutorial track record here, not necessarily great.
I also say this trial was really circled on our calendars, at least, as the next landmark case related to immigration enforcement in Chicago. So I think, you know, federal prosecutors, they didn't have the juice for it and could potentially have been another embarrassment for the Trump administration had this gotten farther along.
Yeah, I think it's worth pointing out that there have only been two, I believe, convictions related to people sort of, you know, in the midst of Operation Midway Blitz, you know, sort of attempting to thwart federal agents. And both of those cases were relatively minor sort of, you know, charges. Especially when we saw at sort of the beginning of Operation Midway Blitz, just sort of this, you know, all-out effort to sort of criminalize what some people said was protesting and their First Amendment rights, and what other people said was sort of an illegal, you know, sort of attempt to prevent the federal government from carrying out their duties, which of course was the heart of the argument behind President Trump attempting to deploy the National Guard to Chicago.
Yeah, the old argument that a grand jury would indict a ham sandwich, maybe no longer so true anymore. All right, Jake, Mayor Brandon Johnson didn't waste any time nominating a new city inspector general. What do we know about his pick?
Yeah, so his pick is David Glockner, and he has a long history of working in public and private service for different companies. He worked for Citadel, most recently for Exelon, ComEd's owner, following up on some of this different corruption stuff across the state. And, you know, he also was a top prosecutor for the federal prosecutor here in Chicago. And there he prosecuted even more high-level state officials. You know, Chicago's number one export is these politicians.
Federal prisoners. Yeah.
So, you know, I think one thing that's really interesting is also what happens with his the past inspector general, Deborah Witzberg. You know, the mayor had a pretty bad view of her. She was pretty likely to not get another term from him. She said she didn't want it. Now she's heading to Attorney General Kwame Raoul's office as her chief of staff. So she's someone who I think is really interesting to keep an eye on in the city and the state's politics.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what his relationship with the new IG is like.
I'm fascinated that Deborah Witzberg in the Attorney General's office will still have a role in enforcing the consent decree that the Chicago Police Department is under. Now, her department was the first and so far only department to fully comply with the consent decree. She will have a much larger role now in enforcing that decree, and I will be watching closely.
Yeah. I just find it fascinating that the mayor has this job of choosing someone who, if they're doing their job right, is going to become enemies with him soon. And so let's watch the honeymoon between Glockner and Johnson.
One thing to look out for with him is, you know, Witzberg had a tendency to go to the press and to speak about her investigations, and that's where a lot of the power in her work came from, was publicizing it, because she has the ability to investigate, but she doesn't really have a ton of enforcement power, if any, really.
She can spotlight it and help people run with it. But
I know that wrinkle that the mayor's administration a lot. So, like, will Glockner do that? I think it's a big question.
Let's start going out for drinks with him now.
Yeah, exactly. If he's watching, we're interested.
Give us a call.
Right. All right, so Monica, this week the Supreme Court issued a ruling kind of weakening the Voting Rights Act as it relates to taking into account race and ethnicity when drawing congressional districts. Been a lot of conversation about how Springfield might respond, but nothing quite concrete yet.
No, in fact, the Senate had sort of dropped the constitutional amendment that would have made it easier, and now maybe they're reconsidering. We've had LaShawn Ford talk to my colleague at Axios, Justin Kaufman, and say, you know what, the Black Caucus was actually against redistricting because of sort of the dilution it might cause in some of their Black majority districts. But now he's saying maybe we should not, you know, I'm saying this, bring a stick of gum to a knife fight. It is still unclear. We had one person speaking anonymously saying, you know, I'm not sure there are the votes for it in Springfield right now to try to go 100% blue state, but the landscape is changing.
Yeah, it always seems to be. Yeah. Mac, an election-related story of a very different kind. This is centering on accusations by libertarians that the randomly drawn order in which candidates appear on the ballot wasn't so random after all. What are the details there?
So do you guys know this in the drab county building downtown?
How dare you?
I take exception
drab.
To drab.
How about gray? Maybe like this color is what
fair,
their offices
fair.
Look like. But for every election gubernatorial, oops, and presidential, they hold a ballot drawing. Literally, they take out a plastic bowl and they put names of each political party in them, and the county clerk comes mm-hmm. and picks them out. Democrats had won the last four times in a row, so the odds of a fifth consecutive top finish for Democrats was under 1%, and the only people to really pick up that were the Libertarians, who attended this usually poorly attended ballot drawing. So there were three of them there, and then there was me, the journalist there covering. And they sent out this email blast to the whole press, be like, watch the Democratic political machine win for a fifth straight time, a mathematical improbability, but Monica Gordon, the county clerk, went up there and she picked out the Republicans first of all.
Wow.
So the Libertarians' concerns were silenced and they left that day happy.
They thought the fix was in or something?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
This reminds me of sad Bulls fans watching the NBA draft lottery, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, I think it was your mere presence there. They knew
right.
the power of a reporter in
no
the
one
room. That's right. Yeah, it is an odd process. It's sort of, it's very church bingo when you actually
yes.
see it happen. All right, Jake, there was a lot of consternation after Congressman Chuy Garcia's last minute announcement he wouldn't run, effectively cleared the way for his chief of staff, Patty Garcia, to get the nomination. But some independents running for that seat. You wrote about a bit of a pact of sorts they have. What are they trying to do
there? So I went to a town hall last night that was just for the independents. And, you know, there are a bunch of candidates, Myra Macias, Chris Sketty, Alderman Byron Cictro-Lopez, among a couple others. And they all focus so squarely on criticizing Patty Garcia for participating in what I think it's fair to call this political stunt that handed her the Democratic nomination. And, you know, they all said that they need to coalesce behind the candidate who has the best shot of beating her and of beating Republicans instead of all just running. They were light on specifics about how they'll choose who actually has to drop out. And I, you know, I'm very skeptical. It's my job to be a cynic, but I'm skeptical that people will actually drop out. Not everyone's on the ballot yet. They got to collect a ton of signatures, like 11,000.
Yeah. So. Well, that's where the winnowing, I imagine, will happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, if there is one candidate or two candidates that makes the ballot, I imagine there will be some tough discussions. But as we saw in the 9th district race, it is not easy to convince other candidates that they should drop out so that you can win. This will also be an election where Democrats seem to be ready to crawl over hot coals to vote for whoever is bearing that Democratic label, which will boost Patty Garcia, whether it will be enough to sort of overcome, you know, sort of that. The other thing is that we might know Alderman Byron Cictro-Lopez. Yeah. You know, other people might know, you know, the other candidates. They don't have a ton of name recognition.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think wrongly that Patty Garcia is related to Chuy Garcia,
right.
which
helps.
Will be a point in her favor, even though it's incorrect.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see where that goes. But yes, I think the point about how hard it is to get on the ballot, very well taken. One other story that I wanted to talk about, City Hall, Jake, a fight between Alders and the Johnson administration over the budget. It's not over still.
It's a never-ending fight, and don't expect it to end anytime soon.
So what do we have this week?
Yeah, so this week there was a hearing about the city's finances through the first quarter and looking ahead at how some of the parts in the budget have been implemented, what's coming up. And, you know, basically, aldermen in the coalition that voted through a budget against the mayor's wishes in December argued that he hasn't done a good job of implementing the most controversial parts of their plan so far. His budget director certainly argued that they have and argued that they have been particularly transparent, pointed to sort of this like matrix of implementation, red, green, you know, yellow for stuff that's kind of in the works. But they weren't buying it. They also learned that day that there's another Ernst & Young contract for $6.7 million over 2 years. On implementation, so they were pretty shocked and frustrated to hear that.
Thank you for saying point. Don't say 6-7 on the show. Mac, we're almost out of time, but you covered the closure of the much-loved Skyway Lanes, Black-owned bowling alley. It's been around since the 50s. Mm-hmm. What did you hear from folks about the significance of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I could have done a full hour on bowling if you wanted to. I might ask Jake to go bowling with me after this, and you guys too if you're interested. But yeah, Skyway Lanes, the last Black-owned bowling alley in the city of Chicago. During bowling's heyday, there was actually over 100 bowling alleys in the city, throughout the city, but now only down to less than a dozen. and Skyway Lanes put out this viral fundraiser. They sound the alarm that they needed help. They have a facility that lost a lot of bowling leagues during the pandemic. You know, a lot of kids these days are sticking their heads in their phones and not really seeking out third spaces and sports like that anymore. That's hurt the bowling alley. They've actually raised over $25,000 in an effort that kept it open for a year longer. I like to think that maybe all the neighbors got to have one more birthday party at the bowling alley, but unfortunately the problems caught up to them, and it was a bittersweet feeling for the people there who, you know, are out of their, you know, central place to go in the neighborhood.
Well, no bittersweetness at this table. The four of you are great, but we are out of time. So our thanks to Jake Sheridan, Heather Sharon, Monica Ang, and Mac Lederman. We're back to wrap things up right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Week in Review is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, and Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that's our show for this Friday night. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, we marked International Jazz Day this week. Monica, you had a great piece about how Chinese restaurants help keep jazz, you know, alive for a long time.
My great-grandpa Joe, he had a Garfield Park Giant jazz club with a house band, Thelma Terry and her Playboys. Mm. She later went on to be a Colosimo's house band. It was, you know, blues bands, it was dancers, it was Roomba dancers, acrobats, and Chinese restaurants were known for that. They're very risque places at the turn of the century, so much that the city council tried to shut all of them down.
Yeah, and I think a history a lot of folks don't know about, you know, that they maybe wouldn't put together necessarily. You know, they think of the Green Mill and things like that, but
Chinese restaurants, chop suey and jazz.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that serves the needs of clients in the Chicago area and throughout the nation.